I got in, when I grew up, I grew up in the Missouri Synod Church, and my mother was a kindergarten teacher in the Missouri Synod Church, and Christmas cards were very important because she could cut out the pictures on the Christmas card to use in her kindergarten class. But she was very particular about which picture she would use. If there was a picture of a virgin with a halo, it got deep sixed. It just was not, did not make the grade, because that said, with a halo on it to my mother, that said that people had seen Mary as divinity, divine, with a halo around it, and mother would have nothing to do with that. And so, of course, I, as a child, went right along with her, and I threw out lots of Christmas cards that had Mary's pictures on them with halos. I went to the Missouri Synod Church. There was a Catholic church over there. We heard all the things about all those Catholics, you know, ooh, Catholics. And of course, you realize that that's our church. That's our heritage. Each one of us, if we're Lutheran, we have come out of the Catholic Church. And if we don't see this as part of our background, then we are missing a lot of things that are happening within our own church. And some of the repercussions, both for and against things in our church, come really back from what was going on much before Martin Luther. Well, some years passed. I came out here to Pacific Lutheran, and after a while I joined an Episcopal church. Now, as soon as I got in the Episcopal church and someone starts playing Ave Maria, and I'm saying, uh-oh, I'm not sure I'm comfortable here. And so I had to do some research. I had to find out about Mary, to find out what was going on, why some people would say, stay away from Mary, and others say, come on, don't stay away. Mary's got something to offer you. Well, you know, we may all, even I'm straddling in between, and we probably all need to do that straddling. One of the things that I find very strongly about the old Catholic Church is that they said they knew what was right. They created dogmas. You know what a dogma is? It says, if you don't believe that, then you've got to deal with St. Peter. You know, we know what's right, and you're supposed to know. Anyway, I'm going to show you some slides and want your participation in this, so don't go to sleep too fast. I'd appreciate it if someone would turn off the lights. And Don, thank you very much. The first thing that I'd like to ask you is, in what part, what do we know about Mary from the, I'm turning that on just because we need light. What do we know of Mary from the Bible? From the Bible. What do we know of Mary?
Mother of Jesus.
Mother of Jesus. Okay, some more.
Very little, I said.
Very little. Very true. So what is it specifically that we do know about Mary? Where does the Bible tell us about Mary?
The Annunciation.
The Annunciation, definitely. Okay, so that's a prop, isn't it? That was easy. Okay, what next? What does the next thing that we know about Mary after the Annunciation?
Virgin Mother.
So she goes to Elizabeth. Okay, what's the next thing we know about Mary?
Her going with Jesus, with Joseph.
Goes with Joseph. Joseph takes her to Bethlehem and...
his fiance.
And she gives birth to the baby. What else do we know? It's right here. The shepherds come, and Mary says, and she pondered all of these things in her heart. So we have this, so far we have this kind of information from her background. What next do we know from the Bible?
they go to the temple on the eighth day.
They take the baby to the temple on the eighth day, and Anna and Simeon bless the child. They have that wonderful message of Simeon's, let us now depart in peace. And we know, and that Mary is purified after 40 days. What else do we know?
The woman there prophesied there'd be a sword through her heart.
That was, that's in Genesis.
No, it's when they're taken to the temple.
They fled into Egypt.
Yeah, they fled into Egypt. I'll come back to that. Before that, we know that the wise men visited the family, and we assume Mary was there. They fled, this slide didn't go down. They fled into Egypt, and then we know the Holy Family in relation with Jesus staying in Jerusalem and they're looking for him.
You wouldn't be reading a book printed from a printing press there, would you?
No. Don, is that bright light as bright as it'll go?
Huh?
Is that, Don, is the light as bright as it'll go?
Yeah, it's
really
bright for me.
Okay. Fine. It's just the yellow. You know, actually, she is often shown, these are Renaissance pictures now. These pictures were not done at the time that Jesus was 12. But she's often shown reading a book. And Mary is often, and I appreciate that question, Mary is often shown here as literate. And that she was actually, in fact, when we look at the Annunciation, you'll often see her reading a book.
She was very young.
She very likely, now why do you say that?
You're right.
Very good chance. Why would we say that she was very
young? Girls were married off in their mid-teens.
There's another reason too.
It's the scripture that refers to it. Don't know what it is.
Well, the word that we are using in the New Testament for virgin is really also the same word that means young girl. And we do not have actually the word virgin. So we only have the use of the word young girl. Consequently, there is the assumption, therefore, that she was a virgin. But young girl is definitely very, very likely true. Okay, then we find her at
wedding in Canaan.
The marriage in Canaan. Mm-hmm. I think this is a picture by Giotto. Most of these were, by the way. I think he's got a great sense of humor when he puts something like that in there. This fellow who's probably in charge of and drinking and tasting the wine. These are from the Scrovegni Chapel in Padua. Then we find Mary at the tomb, and in between, there's only references to Mary having been, they say to Jesus, well, your mother and your brothers and your sisters are waiting for you, and Jesus said, who is my mother and my brother and my sisters, those who listen. Then she's here at the cross, and Jesus says, John, behold your mother. And so John supposedly takes care of her. And then Jesus is taken down from the cross. And where do we know from her next in the Bible?
John took Mary into his house.
From that day forward. And there's only one other time. And that is at Pentecost. Supposedly she is there with the disciples at Pentecost. And that is what we know, essentially, of Jesus and of Mary in the Bible. Now, that's not a lot of things to hang all of the doctrines and the dogmas of the Roman Catholic Church onto Mary, is it?
No.
So where do we get all the rest of the stuff?
It's tradition.
The oral tradition.
Oral traditions and written traditions, too. I'm going to take you through some of these things for a variety of reasons, going back through Mary again and to see what is actually some other things that have been shown in the artwork that suggests some of the doctrines that have been related to Mary. Here again is the Annunciation. The first one I showed was Fra Angelico. This is Simone Martini. Do you see anything specifically here that you might notice?
Doesn't look like she's too happy about the news.
It doesn't, does it? No. What is it that the angel said to her first? Fear not. So she is shown here as afraid, but also more than afraid, doesn't it? She looks rather disgruntled.
Those plants have to have some significance, too.
They do. Can you see what kind of plants they are?
Lilies.
Lilies was her symbol. And wherever you have Mary, you have a whole myriad of symbols connected with her. Some of them we'll be able to talk about, and others we won't be able to. Seraphims are here, even though this is supposedly a triptych and an altarpiece. Here's another one by Veneziano, who is the teacher of Leonardo da Vinci. The angel has can you see it? A lily. This becomes one of her symbols, the closed garden gate. And why would that be a symbol of Mary?
Her virginity,
a closed hymen. So she is always often symbolized with a closed garden gate, and you may see that again in one of these other pictures. This is by Duccio. and so this was done earlier than Giotto's. What do you see here?
The lilies again.
The lilies?
She's reading again.
Okay, very good. Very good. There's something very specific, and it's very tiny, and it's very hard to see.
The dove.
You see the dove?
Yeah.
This
was the other one, too.
It was in the Duccio. Yes, it's coming down, and what's happening?
It's the Holy Spirit.
The Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit came upon her, and the glory of the Lord. Well, that's not. I got hooked on the wrong line, didn't I? So supposedly, the Holy Spirit comes in, and this is the way she is impregnated. Comes right into her womb. Now this is very important. I think this next picture has something even more significant, and it may be a little bit difficult to see. This is a Marode altarpiece by Robert Campin. And what do you see in this one? Lots of stuff here. The book. You have to speak louder.
The flowers.
The flowers. Uh-huh.
The vessel, the pot.
Mm-hmm. And there is supposedly something, the towel has symbolism, there's just full of symbolism. Do you notice something coming down toward her?
Yes.
What is it? Can you see it well enough?
Like an arrow.
It is actually a child with carrying the cross coming right down there. Now, what was the understanding of conception? Early conception, even during the Renaissance. What is the understanding of conception?
There was a whole child.
The whole child, yes. Abby?
There was a whole child on the planet. It wasn't like that. They didn't understand fertilization, so they thought there was a whole child implanted.
By?
The
man. That the woman was only the vessel that held the child. The woman had nothing to add to the child. And so therefore they had the assumption that it was completely the part of the man that had something to do with it. The woman was only the ground in which the child had grown. And in this case, if they see that Mary was conceived by the Holy Ghost, then there would have been no she had nothing to do with adding to or subtracting from Jesus.
When were these painted?
This was done in the 1400s. Duchos was done at the end of the 1200s.
What's the significance of the cowl, like the cloth hanging?
You know, I wish I could tell you. I have not, it's one of those, all the details in here are the kind of things I say, oh yeah, and then I forget. But the candle is blown out. There's a lot of little significances there that it's worth really while studying. By the way, this is in the cloister in New York. If you want to go there and see it in actuality. And I haven't taken the time recently to do that well enough.
I can understand the artist putting in lots of symbolism, but didn't they know that she was a poor peasant girl? I mean, she's always dressed in all this refinery, or this fine clothes and so forth. Weren't they aware that she was a peasant girl? I mean, you could have the same symbolism and still have her as a peasant girl, but they
didn't. But why? But she's also Queen of Heaven.
Okay.
But that's distracting from the real life.
It's so if you, what we want right now is we want reality. We don't want anybody to mess up. And this is one of the things that the Renaissance painters did do. They would glorify their characters. And I think there is just no other figure in history that is photographed is painted or sculpted as much as Mary. She is in everything. So artists are doing every different style in the process of painting her.
Mary, what's under the bed? It really looks like a snake's head.
Well, it could be, because she would be overcoming the snake. Overcoming the devil. Pardon?
What was that comment?
She said she looks like there's a snake, but is this what you're talking about?
Yes, no.
I don't think so.
Over here by the foot, there's another.
Here's another one. I think it's just the rug, because they're there. This is done in the northern painters, Dutch, Flemish, and so you would have seen rather interesting things. This is a painting done after St. Bridget of Sweden had a vision in which she talked about Mary's continual virginity and the baby being born and on the ground. And so then this painting was done afterwards. You see Mary bowing, kneeling to the child. So Mary is no longer in a position where she is equal to the child in this picture. Here she is kneeling to the child, who is seen as the as God in her eyes. Here is the midwife who said, no, the hymen, if she were going to have that baby, the hymen would be broken. Right?
Sure.
Supposedly the hymen was not broken. This is the legend. The hymen was not broken. She checked it out. The hymen was intact. She believed, and then her hand was restored. But before that, her hand was withered. This is part of the legend. A continual virginity. And one of the reasons why this is a real problem, or maybe you can tell me, why does she have to be continually virgin for all the things that have to happen in the story? Why do they have to keep her continually a virgin?
To believe that Jesus is God.
Okay, and we'll have to come back to that one. Hang on to that one.
Separate her from ordinary people.
Separate her from ordinary people who have
sex.
Have sex. And original sin comes in here too, so we've got to hang on to Augustine there. Sex has been put aside as a means through which original sin came into the world. This was a doctrine that Augustine expounded in the 400s and said that, yes, all of men are sinful because the sin has come down from Adam and Eve to each person through sexual intercourse. And if you remember in the church, one of the things that's been very significant is they have put down intercourse. Paul says it is better to stay, to stay single, but if you have to, only if you have to, okay, then get married so you don't get into trouble. But, stay a virgin as long as you can, if you can. And that becomes the real push in the church, which becomes a real problem for them in a lot of ways. So this is a picture dealing with her ultimate virginity. What do you see? Were these beasts ever mentioned in the New Testament?
It just looks like a cow. I mean, it just looks like a cow to me.
Weren't there? No, the ox and the ass are not in the there. It's in the Old Testament. It's mentioned in the Old Testament, and people have gone backwards and said, aha, this is a prophecy of the birth of Jesus, and we therefore have these things. And there are a lot of other things connected with the stories of Christmas stories that we have taken for granted that are there, but they have become part of folk tales, part of legends that have come back from the Old Testament into the New Testament. For instance, who are the men that went to Herod to say, where is the child that was born?
The Magi.
The wise men. They were astrologers, probably. We could say wise men, but they were not mentioned as kings. But we now see them as kings in so many of the pictures that we have. It's that kind of development that we sort of take for granted in... doggone it, how many of you have Sunday school problems with kings coming down the aisle?
There's something about that picture, though, that really
it's not going
impresses
backwards.
Me.
I can't get it to go backwards, Don.
Well, anyway.
Don, can you back it up, please? Excuse me.
The starkness of the baby and the glory of the mother.
Uh-huh. That baby, and I'll see if I can make this go backwards again. Yeah, okay, now it's working. Yes.
But isn't that part of the art form? I mean, they really weren't that realistic.
Well, I understand, but there seems to be a greater glory.
Yeah, it does not seem like a very... We are used to seeing a very lovely pink 2-month-old in a lot of the pictures. This is a just born baby, and probably the liver isn't working too well, and so it's kind of brown. That's not unusual.
But the painter went to all the trouble of putting such fine clothes on Mary.
Using that really bothers you, doesn't it?
Using a lot more cloth than necessary. Seemed like he would have dolled up the baby a little bit.
Yeah. Does it bother you that the angels have such pretty wings and clothes too?
No, it just bothers me that the baby is scrawny and
the baby is all potential.
Yeah.
One thing that makes the baby look
but
bad is
the focus of the painting is on Mary.
Yeah. That's right. You're right.
And what are all the scrolls and prophecies supposed to be?
Yeah, this is a typical in this part, this kind of artwork about this period, that they, whenever anything they would want to speak, they would put it into scrolls.
One thing about the baby is that its arm, look at its arm, how long it is.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell for sure about the legs, because they're out of proportion.
Mm-hmm. And the body is long. Actually, earlier in the Byzantine period, you get a lot of these little babies that look like little men.
Yes.
Because this is seen as God is already precociously God. This is the other Merode altarpiece, but I'm showing you the whole triptych now. These are the Merodes who have given it, and over here is, this is focused as well.
Joseph.
And what he's doing?
Carpenter.
He's a carpenter, and he's building. Anybody know?
Cradle.
A mouse trap.
A mouse trap.
He's building a mouse trap. Should have some here. But he's building a mouse trap for what? What is he going to catch?
the devil. He is out to catch the devil, because this is what's happening here. The angel is announcing to Mary that she is going to have a child, and the whole intention is to overcome the devil. That's the whole, real whole story of this picture. It's not just that a child is going to be born, another child, but that the devil is going to be overcome in the process. Now, this is one by Botticelli. And it, you can see how very formal this is. But down here in the predella, we have something that's very interesting, I think. In the, I don't know how well you can see it. Here is God. And here God is creating Eve from the rib of Adam. Now, and realize that immediately, in the estimation of the Old Testament people or the early church people, Eve is second rate. Immediately, because she comes from Adam. Even though, and they say, well, if the only reason Eve, you know, Adam could have had a boyfriend. We might not have had any trouble with homosexuals then, but the only reason he needed Eve is to have children. This is thinking. This is things. These are things that are written in the Middle Ages. Okay, so they are in the garden, told not to eat of the tree, but Eve takes of the tree, gives to Adam, and then they are cast out of the garden. Now, why is that in the predella with the Annunciation?
The salvation is supposed to remedy that.
Right, absolutely. The salvation is, this is supposed to change this. What is the beginning of the rosary? What's the first word of the rosary?
Hail Mary.
Okay.
Mother of Holy Grace.
Say it in the Latin. You know what it is in Latin?
Ave.
Ave. Okay, Ave is spelled A-V-E.
Eve.
Eve. So Mary is supplanting Eve. You have the writing, Paul writes about Adam, Jesus being the new Adam. By one man sin entered the world, and by one man then this is justified. So that to some extent, Eve becomes the person who takes away, this is in the theology of the church now, takes away the sin of the first Eve. And I thought I'd show you a variety of devils in the process and to see why it was necessary for a woman to get involved in the process. What is the gender of that particular serpent?
Female.
Female.
Is this a way for the church to control sexism?
Yes, you bet, Joyce, you bet. And the church has been doing a lot of controlling with Mary, and I'll come to that in a minute. What's the sex of this serpent up in the tree?
Female.
Female. And in this one up here?
Pretty female.
A pretty female, even. Yeah. That was one of the problems of the during the early church, is that the people who were supposedly supposed to stay virginal were tempted by the pretty women. So this is the kind of devil that was really existing in the medieval church.
But weren't there a lot of those type of paintings that the devil was a man?
No.
Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen it. I would like to have you show me one.
That there had always been a woman?
I've never seen any other. This is the closest to a male that I could find. This is Michelangelo in the Sistine Chapel. Take another look at that. Isn't that amazing? Did you ever realize that they had, that through all the Middle Ages they were seeing the devil as, that had tempted Eve as also female? Well, one of the things that happens as a result of the fall into sin by Eve, what was the punishment of Eve?
Pain of childbirth.
You will have pain of childbirth. And so this is one of the ways that women then have been put down by the fact, thinking in the minds of the church, that because they have to bear child, they are bearing the punishment of the original sin. This is the pregnant virgin. Now I was in Lyon in June, and the tour guide in the church in Lyon said she had had a whole group of Japanese tourists come in, and she had pointed out the pregnant virgin, and they said, huh? Huh? Pregnant virgin? That is an impossibility. I just thought, you know, you take it so for granted if I tell you this is a pregnant virgin. You didn't even hesitate. You didn't even bat an eye.
Is that just a statue, or is that a birthing chair, or what?
No, that's a statue.
Okay.
And, you know, there's more to it. It's a wooden statue. This is Michelangelo's, one of Michelangelo's early bas-reliefs, where the Virgin is suckling the child Jesus. And this was after St. Francis. This should help you out now with a pretty close. After St. Francis came through and said, we need to have Mary seen as much more natural, down to earth, then that she no longer is wearing some of the pretty clothes, and it's seen much differently. And she is seen as suckling the child. That doesn't last too long in art. After a while, it's seen as rather obscene, so it's not included in art. This is 1300s. And there's some that are a little difficult to understand, but in the process of all that, she is often seen as not only Mary, but also women, as put down by the birthing process as the punishment. This is the Virgin in Torcello on the Isle of Sicily. It's under the Pantocrator. At the time that this is done, Mary, the Virgin Mary, is under the power of the Etonian kings and the King of Sicily. In other words, Mary is now, at this point, doing what the kings wanted to do. Does that sound right? Can that actually happen? See, it's the way that Mary was used, so that when they made the assumption that they were able to control Mary. But on the other hand, Mary was quite a problem for what people had seen as the male Trinity. This is from the Church of the Trinity in Cannes. This is actually a church that Matilda, the wife of William the Conqueror, built for nuns. And I think they wanted to make sure that they realized that they were not in control. So they put these three male, the Father, the Son, and the male Holy Spirit. Spiritus Sanctus, male, right? Male?
Mm-hmm.
Male gender. Spiritus, it's the male Latin ending. In the Eastern Orthodox Church, it's Hagia Sophia. What ending?
Female.
Hey. See, in the Eastern Orthodox Church, which is the same church we're in, only it's really split mostly geographically and politically, Virgin, I should say Mary, I don't like to use Virgin because that's a judgmental situation. Mary was considered honored much earlier than in the Western Church. And there are probably reasons for that. But the Western Church was using her in a very important way. She was very popular with the people. She was revered from early on. In the year 200, she already had paintings in the catacombs in Rome that showed her picture. and the people saw her as a way of reaching that God who already they were afraid of, that already they saw as very just and having little mercy. So when they find a place that has that is sacred to the classical gods, they are apt to build a church on it. This is Santa Maria Maggiore sopra Minerva, over the temple of Minerva. And they've done this in many places. In fact, Mary was very important in setting the pagan goddesses aside and making them second rate. Most of the people that came into this area were had fertility rights, were agrarian, and therefore had goddesses hoping for fertility. And this is definitely a fertility goddess.
San Vitus of Willendorf?
Pardon?
Is that the one in Vienna?
No. I'll show you. In Vienna? I don't know the one in Vienna. So maybe there are many like this. This is not the only one. This is a very common type of symbol.
Are these also referred to as the Black Madonnas?
That's referred to as the Black Madonna.
Okay, there we go.
Because, see, that's the kind of Madonna that took the place of the Earth fertility goddess. And you have, this is a Black Madonna of Le Puy. You have a Black Madonna in Chartres. You have one, Pope now reveres the Black Madonna in Poland, and that's hard to say that name.
So where did that originate?
And this is actually, it comes from a variety of things, but they feel, you know, it's really unknown just exactly where the origination of the Black Madonna is, but they feel definitely, they feel definitely that it comes as a result of supplanting the fertility goddess. That it comes out of the earth. It's black like the earth.
Oh.
And this is Isis with the child, or the Osiris actually, on her lap. And we see this kind of way that Mary is portrayed in many cases. This is a 6th century icon from Mount Sinai, the Eastern Orthodox Church. And this is in the Hagia Sophia, with the baby sitting on her lap. And this is in the Notre Dame de Canault in France. The child has been bashed pretty badly, but it's still the same figure. And we can see that over and over and over again in art. How many times Mary takes the position of Isis. And this is Diana. I thought I had this all set, so it was not going to do that, come up over the top. This is Diana of Ephesus.
Ephesus.
And it's very, very much a fertility god at the same time. People don't really know all about her in terms of understanding her particular bust, shall we say, or variety. But they don't think that's what they are. But this was a very powerful god, very powerful Greek god, Diana. And so how are they going to supplant that? They're not going to have another Mary looking like that. So where does John take Mary according to Ephesus. The legend says John takes Mary to Ephesus, and this is Mary's house in Ephesus. You can go there and you can still see it. The legend says that someone in the 19th century had a vision that this is where the house was, and they dug it and they found the house, and then they rebuilt it. And so in Ephesus, you could go and see Mary's house. So this is one way to supplant some of the old pagan ideas by putting Mary, supplanting them with the Mother Mary. Now, Ephesus is a very important place. Do you know what she was called, what the Council of Ephesus in 431 labeled Mary? Gave her the title of the Theotokos, the God bearer, or the mother of God. Now, that was a real concern, because how can a woman be a God bearer? How can anyone be a God bearer? And Nestor, who objected to this very strongly, said, how can she be the mother of God when God existed from the beginning? When God didn't just start the time that started in her womb, God had to exist from the beginning. So he objected to this title very strongly, but the council in Ephesus may have been bribed a little bit, and they voted for it. And there was great rejoicing in Ephesus that Jesus was labeled the Theotokos. And that was hard for the Western church. You realize you really are having, already in 431, a split between the patriarch in Constantinople and the Pope in Rome. It was harder for the Western church to accept it. This is an icon, a carving. These close up over her, so that you would really have a figure of Mary entirely closed up with fancier robes on than you'd like, I think. And you open it up and you see the essentially the Trinity, God, the whole God, holding the cross that Jesus would die on within Mary. In other words, Mary then becomes that God could not have been here on earth almost without Mary, because Mary is encompassing in this piece of artwork God, as we understand. Isn't that difficult? Mm-hmm. Well, let's go to a different strain. This is going back to Duccio's, and I think we have a figure way up there coming down again. Someone commented before about the way Mary is feeling about this. What are your comments when you see Mary? This is Annunciation. What?
She's not happy.
She's not happy. More.
Here's the book.
Okay. It's like she's read the entire New Testament and found out the ending.
Hey, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Because in some of the icons that come up, you see Mary having that vision, being able to look off in the distance and seeing what is going to happen. And there's that great premonition of what's going to happen. Very good. What is Mary's response to the angel?
What did she say? I had not known man or something?
She said, I have not known a man.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, then be it unto me, even as you will. So she submits. She is obedient. She is passive. She is, what else? Anything else? Any other adjectives you want to add? Because these are all the adjectives that they say, that's the way women ought to be, right? Haven't you heard that? You've looked at this, at Mary, they've said, read these stories, and they said, Mary, that's just the way you ought to be. Of course, they're not just talking to women. They're talking to men, but men don't listen to that one, because it was a message to Mary. A few Sundays ago in church, it was the feast of, I forget what, and the priest actually talked about Mary. And he said, one of the things, the most important thing about Mary was she was obedient. And you know what? We turned him off.
They say the same thing about Abraham.
Yeah.
That he was obedient.
But he was obedient in the, but there was a dialogue.
Yeah.
Right. There was a dialogue there. Actually, the priests, in the Old Testament, the word is not obedient, but the word is that listen and respond. And that's the way it is in the New Testament. The same word is used in the New Testament, which says, where Jesus often says, listen, hear ye, however it is. But it's, the term was really listen and respond. So it would be better to say than to say Mary was obedient. And then she responded, and she responded in this case very appropriately. But because of this response, she was often, we women have been put down. You had something to say there?
Slavery was common during this whole time too. So you get that?
What was common?
Slavery. The master-slave. A lot of the theological notions are expressed in those terms, the master-slave.
Uh-huh.
So it's not just men and women. There's a whole social context. And I guess it would be, you know, depending on what specific time you were looking at, you know, there would be all these other ramifications too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those things would be definitely applicable to everyone. But I think I have to ask women here in the audience if you feel that that has been more appropriately applied to you than it has been to men.
Yeah, absolutely.
You need to ask.
Yeah, it depends on what time frame you're looking at.
I think what I'm talking about is now. I'm not just talking about the 200s. I'm talking about now. It's still happening. It's amazing that all the and now it's much less than it has been in the past. Well, I thought one of the reasons why it's, I think one of the things that has added to Mary and understanding of Mary is that all the legends of the Book of James, which was definitely existing by the year 200, and that is, where did Mary come from? And apparently the story is that Anna had no children and prayed to God for a child. And Joachim is gone out also to pray into the desert with the shepherds. And while he is there, then the angel tells him he will have a child. And at the same time, Anna is also told that she will have a child. Have you heard any story in the Old Testament that is like this, where there is a mother that pleads to God for a child and then promises to give that child to God afterwards?
Hannah.
Does that sound like Anna?
Yeah.
See, there is great similarity between the story of Anna, which is in the book of Samuel, and this legend in the book of James that tells how Mary was born. Now, of course, from here on, it's a little bit different. Joachim and Anna meet at the gate of the city and they kiss, and this is the time that Mary is conceived, according to the legend. That is the holy kiss. And so then Mary is born. The slide doesn't work. Mary is born, and at the age of 8, she is taken into the temple and given to the temple. And this goes along with the fact that she can read. This is all part of the legend. And she goes into the temple, but at puberty, what is going to happen to her?
She becomes ritually unclean.
She becomes ritually unclean because when a woman bled, she was ritually unclean and could no longer be in the temple. So they said, we have to find some way to get rid of her out of the temple, so they need to find a husband for her. So they have to choose a husband, and they have all these people come with their stakes, and the person on whom a dove lands happens to be Joseph, and therefore he is married to Mary. And I have this quote right here, right now, but he said, one of the quotes that comes on later on, there's a poetry, something about my age, old men can't rage. And so
Joseph is often shown as old. Now, he's not as old here as he is in a lot of other pictures, is he? You've seen Joseph very old. You've also seen Joseph doing something very often. Have you remembered pictures of Joseph in with the birth scene? You know what he's doing?
Sleeping.
Okay. What did, remember another Joseph in the Old Testament? Got him in his mind, Joseph in the Old Testament? What did Joseph do?
Dreamed.
What does Joseph do in Matthew? He had dreams. He's the one who dreams about, wise men coming, dreams about taking Mary. And you've got to go back and say, realize that Matthew and Luke, who are writing this part is sometimes seeing the birth stories, not only the book of James, which is definitely apocryphal, but how much of that, the stories of the virgin birth were actually added to the Gospels afterwards. Mary is kept as very virginal, and this is a picture of the Immaculate Conception as it is pictured in art. In Revelations 12, verse 1, it says, "And a great portent appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars." And you're going to see, if you ever look at a variety of things, you're going to see this, including Mexican...
The Virgin de Guadalupe.
That's it, yeah. That we have the same image. This is the image, supposedly, of the woman, the perfect woman, of Mary, the Immaculate Conception, in other words. Who is conceived immaculately?
Mary.
That's what it's all about. Not Jesus was not conceived immaculately, but Mary was conceived immaculately. And this was not accepted as dogma in the Catholic Church until, do you know what the date was?
1851.
Should take it a whole century later. 1950, this became dogma. Isn't that astounding?
And that's, that's when it was officially recognized, but wasn't it getting kind of accepted in the 1800s?
It's accepted long before that. I take it back, you were right. Immaculate Conception was 1854. I get that mixed up. You were right. 1854, the Immaculate Conception. It's the assumption that's 1950. Yeah, and this is, they've had this going on. You know, all the time what's going on is that the people are believing it. Finally, it comes on, it's included in liturgy, and then it's the Roman Church, it's actually states that that's the way it is. This is Notre Dame, and in the tympanum here, Notre Dame, is this picture. Here you have the Dormition of Mary and the crowning of Mary. Down below you have actually Mary. And so the question in my mind, did Mary die?
No, nothing.
Yes, she did.
It's not mentioned in the Bible.
It's not mentioned in the Bible. How do we know? Now, how are we going to know what actually happened? The church supposedly, the political, is now trying to determine whether Mary died, and they supposedly they're going to come to a conclusion whether or not she died. But anyway, this is actually a picture of the Dormition. Supposedly at the time that Mary was to die, she's in Ephesus, and all the apostles come out miraculously around her bed. She dies, and then, or whether, wait, I just can't say die, and then
And then her soul is taken up by Jesus. Here is her soul. This picture is better. As a little child. And so then the soul is taken up with Jesus into heaven. And you see her going up. This is background Jellicoe here. You have the Dormition down here, the small soul here taken up into heaven. And then you have a variety of these assumptions, and the assumption of the Virgin was not accepted as doctrine until 1950.
Now, what's assumption?
Where she is taken bodily into heaven.
Okay.
Bodily into heaven. After all, going back, their thinking is going back in the punishment for the original sin was that your body would decay, you would die and decay. If Mary did not have the original sin, therefore they are.
Therefore she wouldn't die and decay.
Got it. So you will often see the pictures of the assumption going up one way or another. This is Titian's in the Ferrari Basilica in Venice. So once she gets into heaven, what's her position? What's she going to be?
Queen of Heaven.
And there she is, seated next to Jesus.
On his right side.
On his right side. You bet. Where she can listen and get right, I hope he's got a good right ear, because she's going to be talking into his right ear. And all the people that are going to apply to her are going to, they know very well that Jesus cannot refuse anything she has to say. And she has a strange way of responding to anybody who really prays to her. She has this wonderful way of not caring whether you're rich or whether you're poor. As long as you have prayed to her and had obeisance to her, she will do what you want her to do. Well, so she is going to be a very popular gal. She and people are not going to put her aside. So here she is being, this is by Fra Angelico, crowned by Jesus. Again, Fra Angelico. After a while, they decided this whole business was too much like the bride of Christ, not the mother of Christ. And then they had, as this is El Greco, the father, Jesus, sort of a new trinity, where they are crowning her. A new trinity. And there's a necessity, really, for the feminine aspect of God. We have the Abba, Eman in our prayer to say both father and mother. I think it's very important that we begin to consider the possibility of the female aspect of God. But I don't think we have to make Mary God in the process.
Right.
It's 8:30. I could go on, but I do not intend to hold you. If anybody wants to stay and we can just sit and talk or something like that, that would be fine. But it's 8:30 and 9:30. I mean, I'm glad you started. I'm going to have my dates wrong too. Thank you very much for being here. And you want to turn on the lights so that.
Can I ask you a question?